Bye, too.
Randala, he's not on yet.
Okay. I just woke up,
Well, good. I'm glad you had a nap. Did you get your sukkah finished?
yep, barely. That's why I was so tired. Two of them. The one at the synagogue and ours.
Well, I got mine up today. I just got a few finishing touches. I got a table and two chairs in there. I feel fortunate. So, that'll be good.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Doing good. We're waiting for our teacher.
Oh, okay.
Brandy, you want to go ahead and call him?
Yeah, I'll call him. I'll sign my
Okay.
notebook and I'll call him. Okay.
Okay.
Randolph. He said he was having trouble. Anoke was having trouble with his phone, but he'd be back as soon as he could.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't see the handout for tonight. Do y'all?
Is it for class 25 or 26?
Well, the last one I have is 25, and we stopped at The Riddle of the Saba, Part 4, but he said read it as homework.
Okay.
All right, let me see what section that is. Maybe we can... Anyway, I don't see another one. That's all of chapter 9, so it would have to be about chapter 10, but I don't think there's another one. Let me go back again. Maybe I can find it.
Good evening, everyone. I apologize for the delay. I was having technical problems with my phone.
Good evening. Thank you.
Good evening.
I'm still having some technical problems. The volume is down. Would you speak again, please?
Hello, we're here.
We're here.
What do you mean?
Try again.
We're here.
I say,
I'm not able to hear anybody, and I don't know if you're hearing me, so... I'm going to hang up, and I'd appreciate if somebody would call. If you do call, it will tell me that that you're able to hear me. Then I'll know to call back and get on. I apologize for the problem.
You want me to call him back?
Yeah, go ahead. Because I found it. It's at the very bottom of the last one. It's a link. So that'll give me time to print
okay.
While you're calling him. Okay.
Okay, I'll call him back. Randall, he said he's still having trouble and to give him about 5 or 10 minutes. His phone was okay when he spoke with someone earlier, but, you know, I forgot to tell him. Maybe he accidentally touched the mute button. I did that the other day.
Well,
but where are we in that? We're still on class 25.
Well, at the end of that one, there's a blue link. And let me see if I'm right. It says Advanced Reincarnation 27, so I don't know. It's Chapter 9, Section 2.
Okay, Advanced Reincarnation. So that's the one
What you can do is you can type in, well, you can either go to the Reveal Wisdom page. And let me see if I can go back. Hold on.
I'm seeing that it says, like you say, the link on the bottom, Advanced Reincarnation 27, Handout 16, chapter.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
Because it's 16 HTM page.
All right, I'm on it. Cross-gender soul migration?
Let's see.
In section 2?
9-2, yeah, I think.
Okay.
Then it's hard to keep up with the numberings.
Well, I'll be.
Good evening. I am back.
Okay, we hear you.
And I can hear you finally. Please join me in saying the Anna Bacoach. I do apologize for the delay. Anna Bacoach. The letters of the Tishrei, the Pei, and the Lamed. Yahid Gea. Lama Pene. Zo great
about reincarnation in dealing with the specific areas
several of the ideas mentioned above, meaning in the earlier parts of the of this writing, on the website Kabbalah Online, they have translated parts of the Zohar by different people over the years. And so they've assigned that translation to different people, different sections. And because it's different people and there's not really clear overall structure to it, sometimes we can confuse the sections. So this is talking about three sections above section four that I haven't presented to you. The following sections come from Zohar Volume 2, and this is the traditional Zohar without the commentary by Rabbi Ashlag, while what I read you every day, every class, is with Rabbi Ashlag's commentary. And his commentary is necessary to truly understand the Zohar. And that applies to the people who are doing the translation. When they don't study from Rabbi Ashlag, they are find themselves missing things. The protagonist is an old man, a Saba, ostensibly a donkey driver, who meets Rabbi Yossi, one of the sages of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's circle, on his travels. Nice way of saying he's one of the students of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He's one of the rabbis who study with Rabbi Shimon, who are knowledgeable in their own right, who represents one of the ten Sefirot, or the seven Sefirot at certain points in the process of the Zohar. There's a lot of significance to these names and to these people. The donkey driver poses several questions to Rabbi Yossi, who fails to appreciate their true significance. However, his wiser colleague, Rabbi Chia, senses that there is more to the questions than meets the eye. And after probing the matter, they realize that the old man is, in fact, teaching them some of the deepest secrets of reincarnation. Along the way, the Zohar also deals with such questions as why do some people never marry? What happens to the soul of a person who dies without having children? And why do innocent children die young? One night, Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Yossi arrived simultaneously in Migdal Tzur. They both planned to lodge the night there and were delighted to see each other. Rabbi Yossi said, "You don't know how happy I am to behold the countenance of the Shekhinah." Now, we can read this from a literal level, that there's a city in Israel called Migdal Tzur. Or we can understand this from the standpoint of astral travel, that they went on astral travel journeys and met up with each other. When you dream of somebody like your father, your grandfather, that person is literally a soul that has come to visit you. So are we talking about the physical travel or the astral travel or both? And that is never clear when reading the Zohar. He was referring to Rabbi Chia, whom he had met there unexpectedly. Rabbi Yossi referred to Rabbi Chia as the countenance of the Shekhinah, because the Shekhinah rested upon him constantly. You get this idea from his name, Chia, meaning living. And nobody lives without a connection to the Creator. For while I was traveling, I was bothered by an old man, a donkey driver, who plied me with questions the entire way. The first question he asked me was, what is the snake that flies through the air and goes about all alone, with an ant resting between its teeth? He began with union and ended with separation. As explained in a commentary, Or Chachama, the meaning behind this question is as follows. What is the lot of a person who did not fulfill the mitzvah to be fruitful and multiply, and did not even marry so that he might have children? When his soul ascends on high, it flutters about in the air and cannot settle. It does not find a partner. It goes about alone and unproductive, like a snake in this world. For all animals go about in pairs other than the snake, which travels by itself. When the soul descends again into a body, it does not find a mate and remains alone, with an ant resting between its teeth. The ant refers to the soulmate of that man. She is lost to him now because he had refused to marry her and fulfill the mitzvah of having children. While he undergoes reincarnation, the ant, his designated wife, rests between his teeth, for he constantly thinks about her, grinding his teeth in anger at himself for not having married her when he had the opportunity. She, however, finds solace in the other man that she does marry. Thus he began with union and ended with separation. Before his soul descended into a body for the first time, his soulmate was announced. He began with union, the union of his soul and that of his designated soulmate for this lifetime. This time, before his soul descended for a second time, there was no announcement made, and he ended up with separation as half a person, since he descended without his soulmate. What we're learning here is that someone who dies without having children roams around the world. He cannot reincarnate. He can't even go into Gehinnom to be cleansed. He's wasting his time, the time of the soul, which is not the time of the body. And then when he is somehow released from that process, whether it's through the chalitza ritual or through the marriage of his wife to his brother, however he is released from that process, he reincarnates, but he comes into this world not really able to meet his soulmate because he refused to have children beforehand in his last lifetime. And so he is again wasting his time, but in a different sense. I'm continuing to read. The old donkey driver's second question. And what is the eagle that makes her nest in a tree that never was? Her children were stolen away, but not as created beings, for they were created in a place where there is no creation. When they ascend, they descend, and when they descend, they ascend. Two are one, and one is three. Behind this question lies the mystical interpretation of the mitzvah of Yibum, the Levirate marriage. If a man dies without having any children, then his brother, called the Yavam, is obligated by Torah to marry this deceased brother's widow, the Yavama. He perpetuates thereby the name of his deceased brother. The eagle here alludes to the Yavama, who after the death of her husband must make her nest in a tree that never was. A man being compared to a tree who was not intended for her. In fact, had the woman's husband divorced her, she would be forbidden to any of his brothers during his lifetime. Her children were stolen away refers to the children that she could theoretically have had with her first husband who died, and whose soul now enters the child she will have with a Yavam, as will be explained below. And we have had discussed already. But the children she could have born are not created beings that were stolen from her, having never actually been born, but not as created beings, for they were created in a place where there is no creation. This is the Sefer Or Hachama. When they ascend, when the souls of people who die without leaving children ascend from the bodies they occupied, alternately, when the Yavamand and the Yava, the brother and the former wife, ascend to become the parents of the deceased, when he is reincarnated as their child, then the soul of the deceased descends into their child. By fulfilling the mitzvah of Yibum and allowing the deceased soul to descend into a body when they descend, in order to perpetuate his name, the Yavam and the Yavama are themselves raised to a higher spiritual level. They ascend. Thus two are one. The deceased and the newborn are one soul. And one is three. The newborn is endowed with three souls. One from the deceased, another from the Yavam, and a third from the Holy One, blessed be He. The Arizal explains that there is a distinct advantage in Yibum over regular Gilgul. Namely, a child born to a Yavam and a Yavamakan require all three levels of soul, the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama, in a single lifetime. The old donkey driver's third question, who is the beautiful maiden without eyes, whose body is concealed and revealed, who comes out in the morning and disappears during the day, who is adorned with ornaments that never were? This refers to a pure and unsullied neshama, the maiden that has merited to ascend to the Garden of Eden as a result of its good deeds. And therefore it is called beautiful. Without eyes, the neshama cannot be seen. However, the neshama is clothed in the lower level of ruach, which is called its body, when compared with the neshama. This level of ruach is concealed. It is not a physical body, and revealed compared with the even more concealed neshama. It is regarded as revealed. It comes out in the morning because after midnight, towards morning, the Holy One, blessed be He, descends with all the souls of the Tzaddikim from the other upper aspect of the Garden of Eden. What this paragraph describes but doesn't say is what Rabbi Ashlag teaches, and I teach in the basic class, is the whole concept of relativity. Note, the Zohar explains everywhere that there are, in general, two levels of the Garden of Eden. There's the Garden of Eden Elyon, the higher Garden of Eden, and the Garden of Eden Takton, the lower Garden of Eden. The difference between them is that the aspect of godliness revealed in the Garden of Eden lower is from the supernal Midot, whereas the aspect of godliness revealed in the higher Garden of Eden comes from the supernal Mochin, a far greater illumination. Malchim means brains, and it's referring to the levels of consciousness relating to the mind, to the three upper sephirot. Furthermore, the souls in the Garden of Eden lower experience the revelation of godliness as the emotional revelation of consummate love and awe, whereas the souls in the garden, the higher garden, experience the revelation of godliness as profound and inspirational insight into divine truth. What is more important, emotions or intellect? Who controls the body, the brain or the heart? This is what is being discussed in this section. This is what is being alluded to, hinted at, and the commentary that I'm reading, which is the commentary of the translator, I think it's Rabbi Miller. I forget exactly who it is, but I believe it's Rabbi Miller. His translation is generally good, and his commentary is generally good. Sometimes he misses some points because he doesn't study Rabbi Ashlag. It is then that the neshamot from the upper aspect of the garden clothe themselves in their bodies, the ruach, the lower level, the lower essence, as mentioned above. But when day breaks, the Holy One returns to the upper aspect of the Garden of Eden, and the neshamot go with him. Accordingly, as it is said in the Or Chachama, the neshama disappears during the day. The neshama is adorned with ornaments that never were, with the souls of tzaddikim, some of whom are new souls that have never descended into a physical body. Thus, they never were. Rabbi Miller is trying to explain to you a lot of different concepts coming all at the same time, because that's what the Saba does in Mishpatim. But when you read the same material through the writings of Rabbi Chaim Vital, which is what we're doing in our general classes, we take it section by section, item by item, and you don't get this multiple level and this confusion. Although it is not clear that the Arizal is talking about this paragraph of the Zohar, the Arizal explains in Shar Gilgulim, Introduction 3, that after a person has rectified his level of nefesh, he normally must die and be reincarnated in order to begin rectifying his ruach. However, occasionally, if a person has the correct intentions when he goes to sleep at night, as he places his soul in the hands of God, as in the liturgy of the bedtime Shema, when we say, in your hands I deposit my soul, and I will mention that a lot of the tort law that is revealed in the Mishpatim is dealing with this idea of the soul being deposited with God and how things happen with that. And, you know, the Talmud is describing it not from the standpoint of reincarnation, but from the simple level of tort law. Continuing to read. And his nefesh will remain above, and only his ruach will descend when he awakes in the morning. Thus it is as if he comes into another Gilgul in a different body. It was enclosed in originally so that the ruach will become clothed in the nefesh. Subsequently, if he has perfected his ruach as well, the same process may be repeated. His nefesh and his ruach ascend while he is asleep and remain above. When he wakes up in the morning, only the neshama will descend. If he succeeds in rectifying the neshama, good, then the ruach and the nefesh will descend into the same body. The nefesh will become the vehicle for the ruach and his ruach for the neshama, and he will no longer be required to return in reincarnation. Rabbi Yossi continues to tell Rabbi Chiya about this strange old man that he had met. All these questions he asked me on the way, and it distressed me. But now I can relax. Had we been together, we would have occupied ourselves with Torah discussions instead of these other nonsensical matters. Rabbi Chiya asked, "This old man, do you know anything about him?" He replied, "This I know, his chatter is worthless, for had he known anything, he would have been discussing Torah, and the journey would not have been wasted." Rabbi Chiya said, "Is the donkey driver here? Sometimes those apparently empty-headed fellows can turn out to be a golden bell. Here he is preparing food for his donkey. They called him over, and he came before them. He said to them, 'Now two are three, and three are as one.' The two of them, Rabbi Yossi and the donkey driver, had now become a group of three together with Rabbi Chiya, and all three were united as one in their common quest to learn Torah." There's a ritual, a liturgy called the Zimun, when three people are eating together. Whenever you eat, your table should have some Torah, meaning you should be studying the Torah, you should be talking to other people about the Torah. There should be some aspect of Torah revealed in every meal that you eat. But if there are three people, you're able to elevate that Torah, that study, your own soul, a half a sefirah. Purpose of the Zimun ritual that people do when they are studying together, when they are eating together. But Rabbi Yossi still did not grasp the true nature of the old man's comments. And he said to Rabbi Chiya, "Didn't I tell you that all of his words are meaningless and idle chatter?" The old man sat down before them and said, "Rabbis, only recently I became a donkey driver. I was not always a donkey driver, but I have one young son whom I send to school. I want him to occupy himself with Torah. And so when I meet a rabbi on my travels, I try to act as his donkey driver. Today I thought I would hear some novel Torah insights, but I heard nothing. The assumption is that it was he who tried to learn Torah from the rabbi. However, as we will see shortly, the donkey driver intended to teach the rabbi some of the secrets of the Torah." Rabbi Yitzhak Luria comments on the above piece, "Know that the souls of other tzaddikim descend from that world, the higher world, to reveal secrets of the Torah to the righteous and the very pious. This is the esoteric explanation of the Mishnah. All those who occupy themselves with Torah for its own sake are worthy of many things. They reveal the secrets of the Torah to him. Understand that it does not state the secrets of Torah are revealed to him, but rather they reveal the secrets of the Torah to him via the souls of other tzaddikim. Now, the manner in which the tzaddik soul is revealed to a person in order to divulge to him Torah secrets is this. There is no neshama that does not have a levush, a garment, that is what called its cloak or its rabbinical attire in the case of a scholar. This garment is woven from mitzvot that a person fulfills. Just as the angels who appeared to Abraham came clothed in a body, so too the souls of tzaddikim clothe themselves in a rabbinical garment and appear to a person in order to teach him secrets of the Torah. Depending on the level the recipient has reached, the tzaddik neshama from Beriah, or his ruach from Yetzirah, or his nefesh from Asiyah, will reveal the secrets of the Torah to the person who comes from his soul root. When only the level of nefesh of the tzaddik becomes clothed in a garment, then it is revealed as a donkey driver. Know, however, that it is impossible for the soul of any tzaddik to clothe itself in that rabbinical garment unless a spark of Moses, our master, clothes itself in his soul. Rabbi Yossi said, of all the things I heard you say, only one of them surprised me. You either said it out of foolishness or because you did not know what you were talking about. And what was that? Asked the old man. About the beautiful maiden. The old man began, the Lord is with me, I do not fear. What can man do to me? I am not afraid to reveal the secrets of the Torah. The Lord is with me to help me. It is better to rely on the Lord. How good and pleasant, cherished and lofty are the words of Torah. The four expressions used here correspond to the four levels of Torah interpretation called Pardes. And we've discussed the Pardes, the garden, before. How shall I proclaim them in front of rabbis when I have not heard a single word of Torah from their mouths? Since Rabbi Yossi assumed that the donkey driver was simply a foolish old man, he reviewed his studies to himself in silence. As a result, I am not able to judge whether they are indeed worthy of learning secrets of the Torah. Alternatively, the old man said this out of humility, since the verse states, do not stand in the place of great men. He was reluctant to speak at all until the rabbis had spoken first. However, since they had not spoken and he was about to utter words of Torah, he had nothing to be ashamed of. As far as I am concerned, I must say that I am not ashamed to say words of Torah before all, before Rabbi Chaim Vital in the Zohar Arakia, which is where this is being written. From this point on, the attitude of Rabbi Yossi changes as he listens to the words of that old man who begins to reveal the secrets of the Torah. The next section is the beginning of chapter 9. Does anybody have any questions about what we've just read? Chapter 9, Section 1. Men must reincarnate to clear their sins because they study Torah and cannot go to Gehinnom, to hell, whereas a woman are not thus protected by the study of Torah and can purify their sins in Gehinnom. My commentary. In our generation, this may not apply to men and women in the same way. It may apply to people who study Torah and people who do not study Torah. Also in the Talmud, it says that women do not have the mindset to study Torah at the level of Talmud. Yet women are studying this level of Torah. It is my opinion that what represents a male half and a female half of a soul changes from generation to generation. Yugulim really only apply to men and not to women. This is the esoteric meaning of the verse, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains stationary forever. A verse from Ecclesiastes, Kohelet. A generation goes and a generation comes refers to men who reincarnate. However, a woman are referred to as earth. They are forever stationary. In other words, they do not return in reincarnation. My commentary. In our generation, the verse is actually applied differently. A better translation to understand my comment above is a generation goes out and a generation comes, and the Malchut of the universe stands forever. There is a certain concept of Malchut that is universal, and it does not change while the generation can be modified as to where the male and the female is split. Throughout Jewish literature in general, and Kabbalah in particular, the earth is considered an aspect and personification of the feminine. Malchut is the preeminent female aspect of the Sefirot, and one of her attributes is earth. Furthermore, the entire section of the Torah concerning illicit sexual relationships is associated with the earth, its settlement, and exile from it, God forbid. For example, it is written, "And you shall guard all my statutes and all my laws, and the land that I brought you there to settle, it shall not vomit you out." The earth takes the place of the widow, who is not marrying the brother-in-law. Similarly, if the brother-in-law does not perform the mitzvah of Yibum, then he and his brother's widow perform the mitzvah of Chalitza. In Chalitza, the earth plays a prominent role. He stamps his foot upon the ground. She throws his shoe upon the ground. And finally, she spits upon the ground. And the Zohar explains that the earth here takes the place of the widow, who is not marrying the brother-in-law, to allow the soul of the deceased to come back in reincarnation through her. The Ari has explained the indication from the verse that informs us that men reincarnate and not women. Now he will give a reason for it, and it is the first reason for this distinction that he is providing here. The reason is that men are commanded with the mitzvah to get involved with the study of Torah. Therefore, they cannot enter Gehinnom because the fire of Gehinnom cannot affect them. As it says regarding Elisha, the son of Abaya, he was not judged because he learned Torah, but they did not give him the world to come either, since he had sinned. This is taught in Talmud Hagiga, and we have already learned about it in chapter 4, section 7. We learn there that the Torah protects against the fires of Gehinnom. Therefore, those that learn Torah must reincarnate in order to get purified of their sins. Now we learn for the same reason, only men reincarnate and not women. Thus they, the men, must reincarnate to erase their sins in place of Gehinnom. Women, on the other hand, who are not connected to the mitzvah to be involved with Torah, can enter Gehinnom to erase their sins, and they do not need to reincarnate. I know we didn't have a full class tonight because of my technical problems. Are there any questions on this section? Would you like to continue to study? I know it's rather late, so that's why I'm raising the question.
I'm very tired.
Well, then let's, if nobody has any questions, I'll just wish you all a wonderful, happy Sukkot, joyous Sukkot. I'm going to mention one thing for your consideration. I don't know if any of you have become aware, but Baruch Dayan Emet, God is the truthful judge. Rabbi Philip Berg passed this past Sunday. And for many people, that might be considered a difficult transition. He was a wonderful Kabbalist. He was one of my teachers. He was actually my first teacher. And he is now available to people make connection like the other Tzaddikim. And it is important that you consider during Sukkot whether this is a Tzaddik that you wish to connect to and to be utilizing his energy to help your growth in the Kabbalah. He has left the world. He chose to leave the world for a purpose. That purpose is not yet revealed to those of us left in this world. It will be soon. They're planning to bury him in the land of Israel. So it will be after Sukkot that takes place. Does anybody have any questions? Have a truly joyful Sukkot.
Thank you. You too. No.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Is there a sukkah around you?
I guess he left.
I guess so. Okay. I'm too tired to talk to you tonight, okay? We scrubbed the patio and walls and the furniture for the sukkah, and I can hardly, so I've got to go to bed, okay?
Okay, have a good one.
I'll talk to you. Okay, you too. Okay. Bye-bye.